Hi, I'm Carol Markowitz, and when I'm not using my entrepreneurial leadership to help our community, I'm listening to the Power Plug podcast by Fidelity Bank.
You're listening to the Power Plug podcast by Fidelity Bank, where we believe in you, your dreams, and your POWER, the potential of women entrepreneurs realized, and all women in business who want to make great things happen. Each episode is a lively conversation filled with practical advice, tips, and inspiration to help you grow your business and keep you energized. Now, for your host, Mary Foley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Mary Foley here, and it's great to be with you again. I bet you've dreamed and schemed about a new idea or initiative for your business, but making it a reality, well, that's something else altogether different. Today, we're going to talk about what it takes to make your dream a reality with someone who has done it. But first, how's your fall going? Are things falling into place for your business? Or do you have some tweaks to make? Well, either way, a conversation just like this one and this episode may help spur on some new ideas for you and keep you energized for sure. So make sure to subscribe to the Power Plug podcast so you can binge listen to past episodes or have the latest ones right at your fingertips. Now, all you have to do is go to fidelitybankpower.com, click on podcasts, you'll see it at the top, choose any episode, and then you can click on one of the icons to subscribe. We can be found on Apple Podcasts, so great for iPhones, and also on Stitcher, which is great for Android phones. Now let's get talking with today's guest. Today we're talking with Carol Markowitz, who tapped into her grit and vision to spearhead the creation and launch of the New Orleans Culinary and Hospitality Institute that has truly brought a new needed resource to the NOLA region. We want to hear what she's learned about making that dream possible and about her vision for her new adventure as the COO and CFO of Loyola University. Carol, welcome to the Power Plug podcast.
Thank you, Mary. I'm excited to be with you today.
I'm excited that you're here too, because I love the idea of dreams becoming a reality. And I know that's not necessarily easy. And when we hear about another businesswoman's journey, we can learn so much and we can be inspired by that. Now, you're known as the person who carried the torch to establish the New Orleans Culinary and Hospitality Institute, or called NOCI, right? I got that pronunciation right, I think.
That's right. Thank you for that.
Yes, I know it can look like NOCI, you said, but it's NOCI. And you took that dream and you made it a reality. So I want to back up. What were you doing before the Institute, and how did that the idea of the Institute come about?
Well, I'm going to go back or take you all as far back as 2011, which is the year I moved to New Orleans from California. And I'd say that's part of my journey. It was part of my journey to find a more fulfilling way to apply the expertise that I developed over the course of my career in corporate finance across different industry sectors and organizational stages of growth. And shortly after I had my daughter Sadie here in New Orleans and got settled in to our new home, I got involved with the Idea Village, and that's a nonprofit dedicated to attracting, supporting, and retaining entrepreneurs in New Orleans. I served for a year as a quote-unquote entrepreneur in residence, consulting for individual entrepreneurs through various programs they offer as the resident expert in finance that year. And after completing my year there, New Orleans hospitality industry maven T. Martin sold me on the need for a world-class culinary school in the city of New Orleans. And I think if you were to have told any entrepreneurial-minded person who understands the importance of food to this city's heritage, culture, and brand, that New Orleans needs a culinary school, you'd get their attention. It was an idea and a dream spawned by the industry here, but they needed somebody with know-how and what I like to call chutzpah and the ability to take on some risk to bring it to life. And there I was.
Wow, that's really cool. And you're absolutely right that it would make a ton of sense that in New Orleans.
Right. It seemed like a no-brainer to me. And so if they needed the help, I figured, you know, it was certainly a worthy cause and one that was absolutely a no-brainer for the city of New Orleans.
Well, and why was there not already that kind of resource available? Was it just simply it was just now time because of tourism and, you know, and more people coming back to New Orleans after Katrina? Or was there another aspect as to why that hadn't really come to fruition yet?
I think the single largest reason why it had not happened yet for the city is because to build a major culinary school typically is a $40 to $50 million capital project. Mm. And I think it's just been extremely challenging to be able to pull that level of capital together and the support, you know, to bring that to life, to make that happen. I think money probably, in all honesty, was the single largest reason why this project hadn't happened before.
Well, it's a good reason. That's a lot of money, 40 to 50 million for sure. So, yes. You know, you had some sense of probably of that at some point, but did the project turn out to be bigger than you first thought? And at that point, do you think maybe this is just too crazy? Just too crazy. What are we thinking here?
Well, I don't know that I ever thought that, you know, the project was bigger than I first thought. You know, the vision for Noke has always been big and remains big to this day. And I'd say that it'll still take years for the school to truly morph into the type of institute that we plan for it to become. But as they say, you have to start somewhere and you have to learn to crawl before you walk, before you run. But I have no doubt that Noke will be a huge success long term. But with that being said, did I ever think, you know, that this was too crazy to accomplish? The answer is absolutely yes. And I, you know, as that saying goes, everything worth doing is hard. I mean, let me tell you, I could write a book, and I probably should write a book one day based on all the extraordinary challenges we faced over the 6 years it took us to bring this project to life. And I mean, just to give you a little bit of a idea of the types of things I'm talking about. Well, you know, we bought the building in early 2014 with the intention to open the school in 2016. But a few things that happened along the way was that a major development partner backed out in late 2015. Our local bank that we were banking with went out of business the following year, which that's something that rarely happens, you know, in terms of a bank failing.
Yeah.
And then our new plan of partnering with the city's convention center was deemed as pretty much impossible by everyone we knew and trusted. So needless to say, there were many times that we thought this project might not succeed. And even down to a personal level, that included times when my other co-founder suggested I go and look for another job. They were like, Carol, you got to look. We don't think this is going to make it. and I refused.
Yeah, those would be three good reasons. perhaps personal, just no. This project is too big, or it's just clearly not supposed to happen. You know, major developer, bank goes out of business. New plan was now thought to be impossible by, you know, the closest supporters. Oh my God! So what was, you know, when you think about, you kept at it. Obviously, you didn't go get another job. You may have looked, I don't know, but anyway, you didn't go to another place. But you bought big strengths to the table. What was, in your mind, your biggest asset or your biggest strength that you brought to this project? And what difference did it make for it to become reality?
Well, I guess just to build on what we were just talking about, you know, I want to just mention, I don't know that this is exactly the answer you're looking for, but I feel like I have to say that one of the things that I'm most grateful for is the support that I got from my husband that really made it possible for me to dedicate every single waking second of my life and all my energy for 6 years, you know, that it took for us to try to make Noke a reality. And, you know, I was certainly prepared for the project in terms of skill set and experience, and was certainly bought in, you know, as we were discussing, in terms of the vision and need for the project. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't have been able to pursue this dream had it not been for my husband's support and taking care of our young children, and providing also the financial support we needed for me to be able to pursue this dream. So it's a huge privilege, I'd say, that shouldn't be discounted in telling my personal success story, if you will.
Wow. You know, not every woman always has that kind of support. First of all,
I know, and that's why I feel like it would be a disservice for me to not acknowledge that as being a critical factor in enabling me to do this.
Wow. I'm just amazed as I think about that, because it was six years and you didn't know it was going to be
six years.
You know, it
could. My children were babies at the time. You know, I had, like, my daughter was maybe, let me think of her this. When I started in late 2000, she was only a little over 2 years old, and my son would have been like 3 and a half. So, you know, my husband was definitely holding down the fort when I was working around the clock for 6 years. And but it was worth it, you know. And I just feel so fortunate and privileged that we were able to work that out in terms of our family life.
Yeah.
So that I could pursue this dream.
Correct. Yeah, that truly was a huge asset that you brought, is of his support. You said it was worth it. Why was it worth it?
Oh my gosh. Well, why was it worth it? Let me try to explain to you that the entire experience of meeting our inaugural students and then ultimately being able to go to their graduation in June of this year has been like a cloud nine experience for me. You know, they are the reason that we did this. And I think to be able to actually meet them and have relationships with them and see them graduate, especially for those that, you know, were involved from the beginning of the project, it was just so special, because it really reminds us why the work was so important. You know, we're talking about having built something, an asset for the city of New Orleans that has the capacity to serve hundreds of students each year. And it's so powerful to think of the influence that Noki can have in changing people's lives, changing the industry, and then changing our city. And so, I just feel like it was the students, which is really the, you know, ultimately, if you want to consider it, they're the core reason for why we now exist. And they basically made it worth it.
Yeah. Wow. It must have been the awe that went through you when you were just at graduation, even.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was just our first class. You know, what also is very powerful for me is to think about, you know, the future, and like that was just the beginning, and the fact that, you know, over time we could be serving not just 20 at a time, but we could be serving hundreds a year across very, you know, different kinds of programs.
Yeah. And I love the fact that it really is a community asset, as you said, because it's strengthening individual lives, right, by giving them a true skill set that they can use to, you know, earn a living and provide for themselves and families and loved ones. And by that, you're strengthening the economics of the New Orleans area. And
absolutely.
Both individual.
I mean, I think another like kind of, you know, like nuance to that is that, you know, students and people that live and are from the area, they no longer have to, you know, go out of state to go to the best culinary schools in the world, but that now that there's this opportunity for them to get that world-class level of training and education here in the city of New Orleans that is so rich in terms of its culinary heritage, I think is just such a beautiful thing.
Oh, it really, really is. Wow. All right, we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, Carol, I've got some more questions for you about how you got this done. All right, so hold on.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Liz Brockman, Director of Power at Fidelity Bank. As a woman going after her dreams, you deserve a bank that's more than a bank. You deserve a partner. That's why we designed our Power program to not only meet your financial needs, but also your non-financial ones, like practical know-how, savvy connections, and trustworthy resources. Whether it's our Power join-up sessions, online member directory, or private Facebook group, we are your community partner to help your business succeed and flourish. Because at Fidelity Bank, we are here for powerful business, and we are here for good. Find out more, go to fidelitybankpower.com. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back. This is Mary Foley, and today I'm talking with Carol Markowitz about making dreams real. Carol, I love what it says on the Noki.org website. For those who want to look it up, is Nochi.org. And here's what it says: bring your passion to a rolling boil. I was like, oh, that's just such great branding too, and such, but it caught my attention. What did you learn about how to keep your passion for this project going?
Oh, I love that you love that line as much as I do. but I would say that, you know, there were two things that kind of kept me going through all the ups and downs of the project over the years and kept my passion rolling. The first, obviously, is, you know, just the tremendous need and demand for the school based on all the data and the demand and feedback we were getting from the industry and the city's unique place in the culinary world. So, of course, there's that. But on the days when that wasn't enough, I'd say, you know, it was the single vision or the shared vision and extremely deep camaraderie of the co-founders, which are T. Martin, George Brower, Dickie Brennan, and myself, that allowed us to lean on each other when any one of us was losing some steam. You know, we celebrated the small victories and the big victories. We commiserated with each other at times, and we pushed and pulled each other like every step of the way. Mm. So in thinking about looking back on my time, you know, together working with that group, I kind of consider it like it kind of parallels a marriage, if you will, you know, and to keep that passion going, because it takes a lot of hard work, but when you're committed and, you know, are all in, you do what it takes to invest in your marriage, right? To put it first as needed and then remember to have some fun along the way. But just like romance doesn't fuel marriages forever, I feel like a good idea and passion don't fuel entrepreneurial success. You know, they both take a huge amount of tireless commitment for the long haul. And I'd say that having those other co-founders, you know, in it with me kind of helped tremendously to keep that passion going.
Mm, I can totally imagine that being the case, because I mean, for my own business, and I know a lot of the women who are listening and they have their own business, the fact that there are other people they can lean on and really get them, believe in them, believe in their idea. So I've never known a project without of any size, without any speed bumps. You mentioned a few before. But what I'm wondering is what lessons did you learn about what it takes to bring a dream and make it a reality?
Well, I have lots to say about that. And I think I briefly touched on one of the key requirements in my mind, and that is resilience. You know, you have to be in a place in your life where you're able to weather the inevitable storms, and there will be many of those, you know, psychologically, practically, and financially. And, you know, entrepreneurship, I feel, has been so glorified in some ways that I'm afraid many people lose sight of just how hard it really is in every aspect of an entrepreneur's life. The other thing I think that people need to get right is that having a great idea is only a drop in the bucket as it relates to entrepreneurship. I'm an absolute believer in that old saying that ideas are worth practically nothing and that execution is worth everything. You know, of course you need the idea, but the point is that all the work goes into the execution. And without the ability and resources to execute, the idea just remains nothing more than a notion or concept or dream. And if you think you want to become an entrepreneur, you've got to ask yourself, do I have the ability and resources to execute? And if not, you know, how can I pull those things together? And there's nothing wrong with being the idea guy or a gal. You know, the world needs visionaries, of course. The vision and execution, in my mind, require two very different skill sets. And I personally find a lot more people out there who are strong on the ideas and vision end of the spectrum, unless you have the ability to execute. And I think the tension kind of comes from the need to focus and exercise discipline when you're executing. And I think that vision and ideas people tend to struggle a bit with focusing kind of by definition of who they are. And of course, it takes all types to make the world go round, but it's a lesson that I've learned through personal experience and a lesson that's actually helped me appreciate my own personal strengths as being an executor. Like, it's okay that I'm not the brilliant visionary, you know, type, but I feel like I lean more towards the execution end of the spectrum. But I value and appreciate that more about myself, because it takes, like I said, it takes both types.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that question. I want to repeat it again, so everybody can really think about that. Is your question that you said you got to think about, do I have the ability and resources to execute on this idea? And if not, how can I pull it together? So if I'm an idea leaning kind of gal, right, Carol, and what suggestions do you have as someone who's really good at execution and implementation about how to pull that together? No, if I know I'm an idea person, I'm realistic, I'm not good at implementation. How do I deal with that gap?
Well, I think the way you start bridging that gap is, I mean, it sounds so mundane, but it requires planning. And I think even for those that may be, foreign to, there are so many resources out there as to whether they're just online resources or programs that you can participate in, like at the Idea Village, which is, you know, the nonprofit I mentioned earlier that's actually here in the city of New Orleans. I just find that there is just no shortage of resources. And I think that spending some time sooner than later to really think through or start beginning that planning process will help identify, A, what are the resources you would need to execute, including capital, including talent, and, you know, skills, and all the different areas that you're going to need. And then I think going through that process, it'll help you focus on getting more tactical and thinking through who are the people and that you may want to start, you know, enlisting as potential partners or consultants on, you know, your project as a means of kind of moving it one step closer towards execution. I would just encourage people to do research, to reach out, talk to people, ask the questions. If it helps, to any listener listening to this podcast, I just want to tell people that I feel like one of my biggest strengths and assets is asking all the quote unquote dumb questions. I mean, I literally say that all the time, like, please forgive me, but I'm going to have to ask some dumb questions. And I just start asking my questions because to me, A, I never want to pretend like I know something that I don't. But more importantly, I feel like such a high level of confidence in my critical thinking abilities and skills that I'm less concerned about the fact that I don't have the information or don't know it already, as I am about just learning and getting the information that I need for me to then make my own conclusions about things. So I just want to say that's, I feel like being smart in many ways is about asking the questions and your ability to do critical thinking, as opposed to how much knowledge do you already have stored up in your head.
We only have a few more minutes left, so I want to touch on and ask you about your new role that you've accepted at Loyola as the COO and the CFO. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to say that, you know, you are still involved with Nokia because you are the treasurer for the Institute. So you're not totally unplugged there at all. But this at Loyola, tell us a little bit about that next leadership adventure here in New Orleans. What are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, let me just start out by saying that my new role here at Loyola, while it may seem like kind of a big departure from what I was doing most recently at Nokia, I view as being a continuation of my journey or my adventure called life. You know, I'm about 2 months into my new job and still drinking from the fire hose and learning about Jesuit higher education and all that. But one thing that really spoke to me during the interview process was learning about this Ignatian principle called magis, and it's a term that means doing the more, the better, the greater for God. And that concept just instantly clicked for me personally because it kind of helped describe the internal force that drives me to keep taking on challenges, you know, the things that other people might think are impossible or crazy or scary. And, you know, Loyola's been a literal and proverbial institution in the city of New Orleans for over 100 years and went through a pretty challenging time over the past several years, you know, and I view this new chapter in my life as an incredible opportunity to help ensure the long-term financial viability of a place that does such an incredible job of preparing young people to lead meaningful lives with and for others. And if I can apply my knowledge and experience and all-consuming work ethic to support that powerful mission, and to support an iconic institution that's such a beloved part of New Orleans, and to satisfy my hardwiring to do the more, the better, the greater for my community, I consider myself a very fortunate woman.
Wow. Yeah, that you first you with Noki, you've helped bring something from scratch, and that's not just a food reference, okay? Just, you know, from the and here right. with Loyola, 100-year-old now plus and growing institution, you're helping to reinvigorate it and yeah. do what it needs to do today for the NOLA community and really beyond. I commend you for that. Good for you.
Thank you. I'm really excited for this new chapter.
Well, for those who want to connect with you, Carol, what's the best way they can do that?
I think the easiest way is through LinkedIn. I think email, I'm a little overwhelmed with emails these days, which is typically the best way or the easiest way to connect with me. But I think, especially because not everyone out there has my email address, I think the easiest way is for people to reach out to me via LinkedIn.
Well, and it's a great way to do it because no matter where you go, LinkedIn goes with you, right?
So, exactly.
Stay in touch. Well, thank you so much for your time today, for your insights, for sharing some of this story about Noki. And we wish you really the best for your time and your impact, your positive impact on Loyola. And we hopefully will be able to catch up with you again, hopefully less than 6 years from now. All right. But see what you've already been up to there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary.
When you meet the right person or gain the right knowledge you need right now for your business, it feels like magic, doesn't it? These kind of magical moments happen every day for over 600 women who are members of our Power program. I know firsthand because as the director of Power, I talk to members every day and see the magic happen. I'm Liz Brockman and would be happy to talk with you too. To find out more, go to fidelitybankpower.com. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Feeling more powerful? Keep it going. Go to fidelitybankpower.com where you can instantly listen and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Because we are here for powerful business and we are here for you.